Good afternoon. I'm going to call a meeting to order today of the Agriculture Policy Committee. A couple of ground rules. We will not be taking any public testimony. We are not here to debate the merits up or down of the nitrogen rule. We are here to discuss, debate, and to vote on the resolution that I believe you all have in your packets. A bit of background on how we got here today. I wish we were not here today. We passed the bill yesterday off the House floor. Senate also passed the bill the day before. And we took off the nitrogen rule, having to come back to the legislature, and put in another provision that asked that the soil loss index revert back to local county control. And I thought it was a good compromise, and evidently it wasn't seen that way on some fronts. We had a debate on that on the floor. I appreciate that. And simply asked that the governor assure us he would sign the bill putting that soil loss provision back into local control. And as of now, he has not chosen to do so. We did meet with Assistant Commissioner Woolman at 9 o'clock this morning. We discussed the viewpoints and agreed to keep working, trying to come to some kind of agreement. And I talked with Mr. Woolman and John Jaski as we recessed the floor this afternoon, and they expressed some hope that we could arrive at some kind of language to compromise and not have to do this. And we said, let's get together again at 3:30 if there's any progress, and that did not happen. So we are going to go ahead and debate this resolution. And what it does, it takes away, you have a copy of the resolution in your packets, and it takes away the rulemaking authority until the end of the next session from the Department of Agriculture as it pertains to the nitrogen rule. And a bit of background on what we're doing with that. This was legislation passed back in 2001, sponsored in the House by Representative Marty Seifert, in the Senate by Senator Betzold, and signed into law by then-Governor Ventura. And the statute, you, I believe, have a copy of that as well, 14.126, committee authority over rule adoption, is what we're going to be working off of today. But before we get into that, have some housekeeping. We have the minutes from a couple of meetings, the meeting of April 12th. And Representative Munson, will you look at the minutes of April 12th and give a motion to approve those?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I make a motion to approve the minutes from April 12th.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Those minutes are approved. And Representative Lewick, minutes of the meeting of May 3rd, could you check those over and offer a resolution?
I would move those minutes, Mr. Chair.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Those minutes are passed. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, before we get into the discussion of the resolution, I would like to, I guess, formally object to your position about public testimony. As you know, I chatted with you, first of all, that I think you're breaking the House rules. That six-point rule 6.22 states clearly that public testimony from proponents and opponents must be allowed on every bill or resolution before a standing committee, division, or subcommittee of the House. And that rule is very clear. This is a standing committee. This is a resolution. And yet you've refused public testimony. And as you know, I spoke with you on the floor this afternoon, and indicated to you that I had asked the Public Works Director of the City of St. Peter to be able to testify. His testimony, I think, would be very appropriate in this committee, and that the city of St. Peter is one of the cities that is affected by this. And I think it would have been very helpful for this committee to learn about the city's experience with the challenges of providing clean water for that city. And what's I've shared in this committee, the cost to the community and that sort of thing, but I think Mr. Moulton could have provided you, more importantly, the fact that the city has worked with farmers in that area. And one of the problems with what we're doing today is that it's going to divide cities and farmers. And I'll tell you, the city of St. Peter takes a lot of pride, as do the neighboring farmers take a lot of pride in the city. And everyone knows what's going on in that town about this, and they've worked together for years on it, to the point where the city actually shares some equipment with a farmer that farms in the drinking water protection area. And I think his testimony would have been so valuable. After you informed me that he would not be allowed to testify, this is a Saturday. This is a public employee. He took his Saturday. Actually, he had to deliver something up to his lake home in Alexandria, so he got up very early this morning, drove here from Alexandria. I called him. I said, the chair refuses to allow you to testify. He was at Ryerson University Avenue. And the gentleman he is, I just said that you're not going to be able to testify. So he said, he explained that he had a thoughtful 2 hours on the way here from Alexandria. And knowing Mr. Moulton, who's, you know, I think a lot of people know Mr. Moulton. He talks a lot about water because he's involved with it. And he's one of these city officials who works closely with agriculture, and that's a lot of what he talks about. And so he turned around and went home. And so the committee loses that the value of that testimony, and doggone it, that public testimony, this is a democracy, is absolutely fundamental to what we are doing. Mr. Moulton had taken his Saturday, his day off, to make the extra effort to come here, ended up going home, and graceful about it as he always is, but the rule's being broken. I have to ask you, what is your defense for not allowing public testimony from proponents and opponents, which must be allowed on every bill or resolution before a standing committee of the House?
Representative, we are not here to debate the merits of the nitrogen rule. We've debated that on the floor and in committee a number of times. And because we are in session, well, actually in recess of session, we have a pretty small window of time to conduct the business of this meeting and to allow public testimony on a meeting called specifically to pass a resolution and not to take testimony publicly on the topic, to me was the appropriate use of our time to get this done and yet not miss floor session. But I will ask Mr. Sullivan his opinion if we are breaking some rule. I've been to a lot of meetings when they, in the breath of time, they limit testimony, or in some of the meeting committees when they come back with a final bill, they do not take public testimony. I've been to a lot of committee meetings where that's the case. Mr. Sullivan, do you have an opinion?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't, in my role as the research analyst for the committee, have training or a lot of experience with parliamentary procedure. I think Representative Johnson read the House rule that applies to public testimony in committee, and that's all I can really offer in terms of advice is that's the rule, Rule 6.22 regarding public testimony in committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to add a little comment with this. I hear what you're saying, Representative Johnson, and I understand the intent of this meeting. And I think what I have a concern of is not to limit public testimony, but we're here to discuss the tenets of what's before us in this resolution, as the chair said, not about fall nitrogen usage. And I'm concerned that the testimony is going to continually devolve into that, where we're going to be talking about clean water, we're going to be talking about the nitrogen rule, we're going to be talking about all those different things. And so if there is if there's testimony that is, if you will, for or against this resolution that stays devoid of that sort of conversation, I can see where that can happen. I just don't know where it can happen. So in the case of the gentleman, and I really am sorry that he drove out here, but I can just see where the testimony of that person, as you testified what he was coming here to talk about, would not have been on the resolution. It would have been more about the nitrogen rule and that.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, and actually, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Miller, to be honest with you, I actually think it would have been directly to the resolution. And I think Mr. Moulton's testimony would have been along the lines, and I can't speak for him, but again, this is a constituent of mine. I've toured the site. I've toured the facilities. I think we all know our public works directors. And he's a statewide figure in many ways because of the work. But I really think that the testimony he would have had for us today is about this resolution and the fact that this about the need for the rule to go forward, not about the value of the rule. He's a bright guy. And this is the frustration that the city has had over years. I think you know I live in a really polite part of the state. And this issue, I do. And I think St. Peter in particular is a polite city. And so this has been an area of contention and a really serious challenge for them, because when they had to put in reverse osmosis, you can imagine, this is not the wealthiest town in Minnesota. And yet, they have to pay, the average citizen's paying an extra $10 a month, $120 a year. It's been going on for about 8 or 9 years now. So if you lived in St. Peter during this time, you would have paid an extra $1,000 to just for clean water in your home. Everybody knows there's no contention in this area about the source of the problem. It's a unique geography. It's very coarse soils. Nitrogen just falls through there quickly. And everybody knows that. And yet the city of St. Peter over this time has very quietly gone ahead and done this. You haven't seen protests on it. This may be news to you. And it's because of their respect for their neighbors, and their neighbors in this case, the farmers. And we're talking about neighbors that have been neighbors to St. Peter. St. Peter's an old town. These are 150-year-old farms up here. And those farmers also have a deep respect for the city of St. Peter. And so this is not a case of contention. This is an example where the cities and the farmers have tried to work together. I'm not going to suggest that it's universal, but there's a lot of farmers that work with that city in trying to improve it and really stand as an example of what the state can do on this very issue of the point of the rule. And so my guess is that his testimony would have been along the lines of telling us the story of the history of that relationship. He's worked for the department for 30 years, I believe, 25 years. And so he knows it well. And the grace with which that city works, I think, offers as an example of what can be done in these all 30 of these cities should this rule go forward. And I think really makes the case for not passing the resolution. And a lot of my concerns personally are there can be tension between farmers and towns. We all know that. And no more so in this issue. And by doing what we're doing today, what appears that we will be doing today, really just exacerbates that tension. And I'll tell you, that is not the way the folks in Nicollet County want to live. We want to live where we're working together to solve problems. And this is one of the problems we have. It happens to be fairly well isolated to the city of St. Peter. But I'll tell you, that's been the history of the issue in this community. And it can also be the history of histories can be written going forward where other communities are doing that. And I think for our Ag Committee, our Agriculture Committee, all the time I've spent on it is we talk about bringing agriculture together, but really it's about bringing rural Minnesota together. And what this appears to be doing, if we go ahead and make this choice to take this action today, we're really challenging that notion. And just as we fight for a one Minnesota, that we're all together in this Minnesota, well, we're also all together in this in all of our farm communities too. And there can be tensions. There's differences in economic opportunity. There's differences in water quality. And I think when we foster an environment where people work closely together to solve those problems and really reach out to each other, there's ups and downs in that. There can be conflict. But nonetheless, my experience in my community is that the community does seek to work together, and they see this as a major step backwards from that. And if anything, it will serve to erode that unity that that community works so hard to create with the neighboring farmers. And so that's what I think his testimony would have been. And I guess I've tried to say it for Mr. Moulton. I think Mr. Moulton would have done a much better job than I could. But I hope this committee really takes that to heart, because I'll tell you, building harmony and building, rural Minnesota faces a lot of challenges. We do not want to divide rural Minnesota. And I think this will serve to do it. And I think it's going to make this issue could add to the tension in St. Peter and all these communities, all 30 of them that face this issue. And I think it's a lousy choice, and I think it's a very poor choice. And back to the rule, I also think that this is a dramatic action today. This has never been done. And a dramatic action, and then not following the rule, not allowing testimony, boy, I'll tell you, it's not the way that I've tried to work with the agriculture issues, water issues, and I've worked a lot on those issues combined, partly because of the experience of the city of St. Peter. This is a huge step backwards in the progress for rural Minnesota, so I think it's a drastic mistake.
Representative Johnson, you did do a very good job of articulating the position of your city, but I do question the passage of this resolution stopping all of the cooperation and progress you say is going on in your area. I don't think that has to happen. Next question, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wholeheartedly disagree with you on your last comment. I do think this stops cooperation. I think this stops movement on this particular issue, which is, I think, your intent. I also think it's a shot at the governor, and to not allow testimony just on that principle alone is wrong. But you heard the rule read. I've heard time limits on testimony. I've heard you get 2 minutes. I heard you get 20 minutes for the proponents and 20 minutes for the opponents. I've heard that in very partisan committees. And I wholeheartedly admit to being a partisan in this particular building, and I have gotten into partisan fights. And I came to this committee 2 years ago because I had heard the reputation that this committee was not a partisan fighting committee. And I see that that has, in my 2 years here, I've seen nothing but very partisan, a little bit more tactful fights than in other committees. One of them, I threatened to take the gavel away from the chair if he banged it one more time while I had the floor. And I would never do that to you, because I respect your temperament and your direction of this. But I don't respect the direction, the way you run the committee. And I think not only should we have heard from the person from St. Peter, but this particular bill, this particular partisan shot at the governor, kind of threat over your head, Mr. Governor, if you don't sign my bill, we should have heard from the other 30 communities that this is going to cause a problem for. So if you have to put in a reverse osmosis program in 30 cities, are each and every one of you going to vote for that tax increase that's going to be needed for the PFA? Because, they fought hard for, I think it was $160 million for PFA, which would have taken care of this year's, but not move the list of cities on their request. You would have to spend a lot more money to hit those other 30 cities when they're going to need it. And then finally, is this the precedent we're going to set when this comes up again and again and again? Because the tool that you use today will be used tomorrow. So you've opened up a Pandora's box by trying to use this particular resolution. And believe me, I can think of a lot of issues that I would like to put this onto. Our arguments are here. Our reasoning is here. But to use a backhanded self-serving kind of resolution to tell the governor that you don't like what he's doing, but you don't have the power to stop him? That's not why I came to the Ag Committee. I have spent 20 years here, and you can ask many cities. I have spent a lot of time with economic development, pouring money out into the greater Minnesota and being a champion for greater Minnesota. 60% of Deeds money, 65% of Deeds money is spent out in greater Minnesota, and I've been a champion of that. And I wanted to bring that expertise here. It's not happening because this has become a partisan committee, and that's sad. And I think we should have heard that testimony from the other cities. I think we should rethink before we take a shot at the governor, or you should anyhow, because I'm going to vote against this resolution. And the idea that you don't let testimony. It's a great democracy.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I would agree with Representative Johnson and about how important public testimony is for this for this process. This is what makes this committee so important, that we hear from everyone and gather everyone's voice in order to make such an important legislation. And because this rule has impacts with PFA, this rule has impacts for cities and for the farming industry at large. And so we need to open this up for a lot of public comment and make sure that we get this right, which is the intent of this resolution today. It's to make sure that we don't rush into putting forward legislation that has such broad impacts. This rule needs work. I think we all agree on that because of the broad impact. So this delays our rushing to judgment until next session, where we can spend the entire session debating this and bringing in a wide swath of public comment to understand the impacts before we rush to push legislation through. This needs work, and we'll have the entire next session to bring in public comment and make sure that we don't implement something so quickly. And so for that reason, I support it. That's why we don't need to have public comment coming in today to gather what we can in just an hour or two. We need a lot of public comment. We need to make sure that everybody that's impacted by this rule can come in and talk to about it so we can work out the details of what needs to be done for this rule. I support, and I think the author of this rule is here today, of this section 14.126. The intent of this is so that rules don't go into place after session, or that we get the proposed rule just weeks before we end. We need to understand the impacts. We need to make sure that everyone has the time to come in who may be out in the fields planting right now. We need to make sure that they have time to come in next session and discuss this so we can come up with a perfect rule that works well for the cities, for the agriculture industry, and we can get it right. So for that reason, I support this, and I understand why we're not bringing in public comment today for such a short period of time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I'd just like to ask for a roll call. And when we take this vote, I have to say, this is a cringeworthy moment in time. And I'm kind of so stunned that this is we have devolved to this, using this as a part of our process. I don't know what happened to communication, to being able to speak across the aisle, across the legislative bodies, across communities. This is, it's extremely sad for me. And, you know, maybe, you know, I sit and I look around this room, and Representative Bennett and I share a Senate district. We're the only two women on this committee, and I have to wonder, frankly, if this is boys being boys. It's a challenge for me. I really cannot understand how we've gotten to this point that we have to be bullies in order to get something done our way. And I do think I voted for the bill yesterday. Was it yesterday? I voted for the bill. I support moving forward on the bill. I have communicated with the governor's office. I support him to sign the bill. I would like that to happen, the ag policy bill. I'm not sure what the intent is of doing this today, but the appearance of this is really that it is only political bullying. And again, I'm not sure if this is a gender thing, if this is because I'm a counselor and I'm used to listening and helping people solve problems, if it's because I grew up in a small town and people pulled together to do what's right. Chair Anderson, you and I, I think we're cut from the same cloth in a lot of ways. I don't see us being far different in a lot of issues. And I feel bad. I feel sad. Regarding public comment is going, the rulemaking process is a rulemaking process. And the public comment, the rule has been out for how many weeks? 3.5 weeks now? We could have had a committee hearing on the actual rule. So today we're not going to talk about the actual rule, but this is what this is all about, is trying to either do the bullying to convince the governor to do something. And again, when boys are boys, frankly, I raised two sons myself. I know that sometimes a reaction can be that they're going to, like, dig in their heels even more. And frankly, maybe next time around we need more women on this committee. Maybe we need a little bit more thought that is looking at the long range of how we're actually addressing these things. Communities suffer. And clean drinking water, again, I have said this before, but we're going to see a census in a couple of years, and we're going to see redistricting, and we're going to see how the state is, again, with regards to who represents whom and how it's going to lay out. In agricultural areas, we are going to have fewer representatives. We are going to have perhaps a quieter voice than we currently have right now. We are going to be challenged due to just the demography of our states and where people choose to live. That's going to potentially harm us unless we figure out that together we can work with people who live in the city, the big city or the smaller cities. We have to be able to work together to solve our problems, because frankly, if we don't, we're not going to have a voice, and we are going to be diminished in our capacity to actually represent people throughout the state. I'm extremely concerned that this is before us today. I don't know if the Senate has taken it up yet, and I'm even sad that you are, if they haven't, that you are going before them. Because if the Senate were doing this, they'd have their own discussions. But it's, I think you're a person of the highest quality, Chair Anderson. I have often said you are one of my favorite people in the Minnesota House. And I'm not trying to shame you regarding this, but I'm just so disappointed that this is something that we have devolved to, that we can't have a clear and honest discussion, and that we can't engage the executive branch in a way that helps us all solve problems. I don't want farmers to be on the wrong side of not wanting clean drinking water for the people in their communities and in our state. And I fear for what can happen in the future if you go ahead and approve this measure, and then we are in a position that the rule is stalled out for a year and we don't have it. That's a sad state for all of us in Minnesota, but I'm disappointed. So I just needed to say that, Mr. Chair, and I again caution you all to think into the future, into your own communities. Clean drinking water should be a right that we all expect to have.
Thank you, Representative. And I take the words you all say seriously, and my intent in not allowing public testimony, and maybe I was wrong, but I'll say that right here and now, it was not to stifle testimony on this topic. It was that they were going to work and act on passing the resolution. So what I think I'm going to do is we will continue here until 5 o'clock, and then I'm going to recess the meeting, and I'm going to open it up to public testimony when we come back again after session. Hopefully it's not too late, and if it is, we'll come back tomorrow. And in your comment, Representative, about a time limit is what I should have done. I was concerned about this dragging on and cutting into floor time because we cannot meet. This is not a conference committee. We can't be meeting when the House is in session. That was my intention, and I will look at that. So having said that, Representative Bennett, you're on the next on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to add a comment. And Representative Poppy, thank you for your words there. There's a lot of wisdom in what you said. But I would have to say, first of all, I'm honored to be the other woman serving on this committee. I think it's been a wonderful experience. And we're from a big ag area, and so to be on this committee is a great thing. I do not see this as a men versus women thing, and I wanted to speak up about that. First of all, if there's any other woman to serve on this committee, it would be you I would choose, because I do respect you greatly. This is about farmers not feeling like they are getting the voice that they need. And we're trying to say, let's delay this, and actually from what I understand, the rule would go in on January 1st, and it's delaying it until we get out of session at the end of next May. So we're not looking at a huge delay. But I know from speaking to many, many farmers and hearing from them in my district, they are frustrated not just with this nitrate rule, but much of rulemaking they feel is getting jammed down their throats without getting the opportunity to have substantial input. And I guess that's where the question is, a substantial input once that rule comes out. And they deserve that, as do the communities. Both, all the groups, all people deserve that input. And I think leaving next session to be able to take a look at this rule more and have that opportunity, as Representative Munson said, for extensive input on how the impact will hit farmers, how it will hit cities, how it will hit our rural communities, everything needs to be heard more. So I don't quite honestly see this as a boys or girls or men or women thing. It's just about the fairness of proper input. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. She mentioned the timeline here. The timeline had been that the rule would go into effect, I believe, December, January of next year. And what this would do would be to delay that until after the session ends in May would be what this resolution would do. Further discussion, comments, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make a comment about the length of time that people have been engaged in this. It's been nearly 30 years since the Groundwater Protection Act, and it's been 10 years of conversation regarding this. And I know that to be true because of the people I've spoken with who've been participating in this. And we have had farm groups and farmers and people from with science backgrounds, and we've had a number of people that have been engaged in this. And it's just, especially on this rule, this has been one of the most well-vetted rules that you probably have had before the legislature. So I just wanted to make that comment. And also, I don't necessarily see this as men versus women or boys versus girls. I'm just saying that I think by gender, people look at things differently. And I obviously, maybe I'm a gender of my own, but I look at this a whole lot differently than the other people around the table. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To that point, well, let's go to Representative Johnson.
Yeah, to suggest that there hasn't been public testimony, and I think Representative Poppy just shared the history on this. And if you're thinking about advancing further, that even the implementation of the proposed rule, there's a long time on it, but we need to know what happened in the summer of 2017. The department held 17 public listening sessions across Minnesota. Those public meetings engaged over 1,000 farmers and landowners in conversations about the rule. The listening sessions were held in Marshall, two in Marshall, Chatfield, Farmington, two in St. Cloud, Wadena, McIntosh, St. Paul, Fairmont, Roseau, Warren, Hawley, Mankato, Bemidji, Crookston, and Rochester. I attended the meeting in Mankato. So there's a tornado coming through, so it was kind of a scary night. We had to vacate for a moment. But the room was full of farmers. And Commissioner Fredrickson heard every comment, totally respectfully listened to them. There was a lively debate, the kind of public comment that makes the democracy strong. And in addition, they received over 820 written comments from Minnesotans before even promulgating the rule. To say there has not been public input, and contrast that to today, when this meeting was announced, no testimony, and thank you for recognizing that, but I'm not going to ask Mr. Moulton to drive another 4 hours to come to this meeting. I can't do that to my neighbor. The doors are locked in this building today. Not only is there no testimony, but the public doesn't even access to hear it. Are we on TV today? I don't know. Is this meeting? I'll ask a question. Okay. Fortunately, it's on TV, and I hope Minnesotans are watching. But the doors to this building are locked today. Contrast that to over 1,000 farmers and landowners, 17 public meetings, and to say that we have to take an extraordinary action, never been done before, using a committee process, so there's a dozen of us here and another dozen maybe in the Senate, instead of the 201 legislators that represent the people of Minnesota. It's a backdoor meeting. It's the kind of thing that's done in other countries, it feels like to me. It's a cheap way out. It's the opposite of what the Department of Agriculture did. And you want to own this? And at the same time doing something that we know is divisive, dividing rural Minnesota on something as fundamental as clean drinking water. When the governor says he's appalled, I'm appalled too. This is not why I came to St. Paul. And I tell you, I think Minnesotans across the state, especially where I live anyway, the rural Minnesota, this is not the way we conduct business. I think it's, as you can see, I'm pretty upset about this. And I think Minnesotans have a right to be upset too. And I really ask you again to rethink what you're trying to do today. We don't need to do this. We can do better in the Minnesota legislature. Minnesotans expect us to do that.
Just a slight correction. The doors to this building are not locked. They were unlocked 15 minutes before the meeting started by the sergeant. So this is a public building, and the doors are unlocked. Representative Miller was next on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate the lively debate. That's part of what we do here. That's part of the process. I'm a little bit disappointed with some of the accusations and name-calling and labeling, but we're all a little bit tired. We're stressed at the end of session, and so I certainly don't take exception to that. And I think that comes out in the process, and that's okay, too. Well, Mr. Chair, what I want to talk about for a minute is exactly that we are a representative democracy, and in that we have a process. And in that process, we have laws that govern what we do. There's rules, certainly, that we govern what we do. But really, if I were to sum up the thing that I like best about a representative democracy is that we are elected as representatives, and we are inserted into a system of checks and balances at many different levels. We have the most obvious ones where we have executive, legislative, and judicial, where there's checks and balances. But I think we also have those in many different angles, many different ways. And as we move forward with issues, sometimes when they become difficult, those checks and balances become strained. They become more apparent. They become, okay, we have to do this. My frustration with Governor Dayton when it's come to stuff like this, particularly the rules in this, and I've seen it before. I've only been here 4 years, but I've seen this in many different times, is that it's ironic that we're kind of getting pressed here. Mr. Chair, you're getting pressed that we're trying to game the system when we have a governor who time and again has done that. And quite frankly, I'm going to be blunt. this rulemaking process on this with the deadlines. And if you remember, in the beginning of session, we said, where are these rules? Where are these rules? We had to basically kind of force the hand so that we get them when we did. They weren't even going to show up until about now originally, or the week after we got out of session. And that troubled me. And quite frankly, I don't trust the rulemaking process the way it was presented forward. However, we do have a rulemaking process, and I don't wish to usurp that. But there's kind of an interesting thing here. I have a hierarchy. I have a hierarchy that if you have an election certificate, you bear a bigger responsibility to the people of Minnesota than you do if you are a bureaucrat. And because of that, we sometimes have to find ways in which the elected person supersedes that bureaucrat, not by breaking the laws, not by usurping them, but we need to assert those laws when situations like this happen. And I look at this Minnesota Statute 14.126. This is not some sleight of hand that we found buried deep in some book on traditions or things like that. This is actual statute in the state of Minnesota. And because it hasn't been used before, really just means maybe we've never been pressed to this point that we have to do this. This addresses rulemaking, nothing more. This isn't going to change a law. We haven't found a way to make a committee just do whatever it wants. This is part of that due process that we talk about. And when I look at this, we are empowered as a committee in this law that was signed into law by duly represented elected officials, that we have a law in which we can, when we feel that things have kind of gone outside the scope of what is supposed to happen, we have a tool. This is a tool, and I also want to say, members of this committee, this tool just delays that decision. That's all that it does. It doesn't negate it. Now, granted, when we have a new governor next year, when we have a new legislature, perhaps that may happen. But, again, that's part of the process. The rulemaking process that the governor is proceeding forward I did not bring the letter, and I wish I would have, because there was points I wanted to make out of that. But one of them is, one of the points that was made was we had a perfect opportunity to let people vet these rules. Thank you very much. Now I have to actually back up what I was going to say. But there's a part of this in somewhere where it said all these people were kind of usurping the ability for people to come and have a discussion about these rules, which is part of the rulemaking process. We didn't do that at all. They're still going to be able to do that. We didn't say you have to just erase rulemaking. We just said it's going to be delayed till the end of the legislature. Now, I can tell you personally that if I'm so honored to be reelected, I'm in the legislature and have an opportunity to do it, we're going to press this further. And if we come to the conclusion that we don't like this, I am going to try and change this legislatively. But that's still two different bodies voting on a bill and then being signed into law by governor, all by elected officials. So I know we have a role for these agencies and the bureaucrats that work in them. There is a role. I don't want to dismiss that. But at such time that as a duly elected representative with an election certificate believe that they are doing something outside the scope of what they should be doing, I'm going to try and assert my authority. This right here, this 14.126, authorizes me as a duly elected official to vote in this committee to decide if I want to have this rulemaking. Mr. Chair, you're not doing anything to usurp the rules or the law in the state of Minnesota by doing this. You're bringing it forward properly, and we can talk about whether you should have public testimony or not. We can certainly have that. But to say that this committee does not have the authority to do this flies in the face of Minnesota law. So I think we should certainly move forward with this. I commend you for your willingness to say, hey, maybe we should have some public testimony and providing an opportunity for that to happen. I know it's not ideal for your, and I feel bad about that. When you have people that live out by us, Mr. Chair, you've seen this too. We have people that come out here from a long ways away, and you get a committee where there's lots of testifiers, and someone out in my area might leave at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they come and they testify for 2 minutes, right? So I get that pressure, and I feel certainly bad about that, and I thank you for finding accommodations that can at least handle some of that. But we certainly must move forward with this, and I thank you for bringing this forward, and I thank you for looking at this. If we are pressuring the governor in such a way to, say, rethink our ag policy bill that we have before you, and we have a tool in which we can do that that is legal to do, and that puts pressure on us, that's not shame on us. That's using the tools that we have to be able to have that check and balance between the executive branch and the legislative branch, so I certainly think we must use it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Chair, members, and I agree with what Representative Miller said, but one of the things that concerns me that was said earlier is there's this make-believe that this rule is like walk on water. You know, just three things. Data was used from 1993 to 2001 to create tables. Those tables are outdated that it was used to help create this rule. The agriculture industry has made such great advances, and that's not been considered. We've been hearing that, hey, this rule is like great. Well, the biggest problems are found in coarse soils. You know, it's like in the old days, if someone had a measle and the doctor would say, let's quarantine the whole town instead of just quarantine the individual, I mean, that house. And that's what this MDA rule does. So in this committee, we have the right, because a lot of people in my area have, we talk about that we have listening sessions. They've not been heard. That's the problem. There's listening, but they haven't been heard. And this is why we have to do this. And then saying us guys are like immature and maybe we're going back and forth on, and so, no. We are here to represent our people. We can make that same argument with the governor right now at the last minute thing. But I'm not going to go down that path because I'm going to be respectful of the governor. But the fact is why are we quarantining most of the state when there's problems with there? And then finally, University of Minnesota is not the only source for fertilizer recommendations. Just because the U says that there's a 10% application doesn't make it so. Farmers cannot afford to waste nitrates, and that's there's that disrespect that we're seeing that I talked about on the House floor yesterday, and we're seeing it again. So what we're doing is we're allowing our, like Representative Miller said, I'll allow our authority to bring this down to earth instead of being decided in St. Paul by bad science. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to go a whole different way, and I was actually going to pass. But so now we've just insulted the Minnesota Extension Program. We've insulted one of the premier agricultural and research universities in America. In America, they're in the top 10. And to say maps are out of date, 2011, typically soil takes a good length of time to make some serious changes. So I find it kind of interesting that we're going to do those kind of insults and not heard. Again, I think it was 17 listening sessions, 1,000 comments. I'm sure there were comments that said, don't do anything, period. That's what, people are concerned, afraid, over cost, over doing something different. But we know that the earth can only take so much. And we have to take steps in order to assure the safety of people that live on this land. I do want you to remember what happened in Iowa. In Iowa, Des Moines brought a class action lawsuit. And lo and behold, Iowa went. All three bodies were Republican, and you know what? They preempted the ability for cities to bring lawsuits over water. And your party, Mr. Chair, has been pretty active on the preemption issue over the last few years, and could we have a preemption against cities bringing lawsuits to make sure that their water is clean? And that's a city that's, whether it's Redwood Falls or Roseau or City of St. Paul. Actually, we get our water from the Mississippi River, so we're a little bit safer there. Members, can you always have more talk? Yeah, you can. But at some point, you actually have to do something. And again, 1,000 comments, 18, 19, 15, however many open hearings they've had is amazing. They make rules that affect multiple industries on a lot less. So I think that's kind of ridiculous to say that people have not been heard. And, Mr. Chair, to the idea of holding this, I don't think you'll have a whole lot of people coming back at 10:30 or 11:30 at night to testify, but it's a good offer. But I think you'll get the same effect from just saying no.
Thanks, Representative. And I would just say, I think this is kind of a culmination of concerns built up by farmers and those in the ag community over a series of things that have happened these last couple of years. And I go back to the seed treatment, the push to make Minnesota the only state that regulated seed treatments. That was a shot in the bow, I think, of agriculture that really left farmers concerned. Then you go down the list, ditch mowing, all the other things that seem to be compressing on agriculture, really during a time, we just passed $250,000 in our bill that got taken away, but for mental health for agriculture, because it's difficult, it's hard to try to make a living on the land today. And this is an attempt, I think, to slow down the process. And I will admit, I've told the ag folks, that department folks, that they've made a lot of improvement between the first draft and the second draft. I salute them for that. They listened. They did things. This is just an effort to slow it down again. And again, I'm a bit befuddled why the big hang-up over not accepting what I think to be the small offer we made about dropping the M provision from coming back to them allowing the soil loss provision to revert back to county local control. That to me is the crux of why we are here. Now I'll get off my soapbox and call on Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been listening. I guess I haven't a lot to offer other than I think maybe I'd suggest maybe rethinking the part about taking testimony. I'm not sure what would change if you would do that. Just my opinion. I've heard a lot about these listening sessions. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've attended a lot of listening sessions, not ag necessarily, but others where the government has been involved. And people have poured their heart out, and when the final results are in, it has nothing to do with what they heard. So you can have listening sessions, but it doesn't necessarily say everyone there is really on board with what's going on here today. So I guess I'm a suspicious guy. But I think that we need to really be in charge of this. I sympathize with what farmers are dealing with today. And to me, this is a minor thing that we're dealing with as far as postponing this till next session. I don't see where that's a major heartburn. So, again, basically, that's my two cents.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the indulgence of being able to continue this discussion. So thank you. And I would strongly urge you to, at 5 o'clock, take a break and hopefully get maybe some clarification. Maybe there's some I haven't given up hope that the governor is going to look at this and actually consider what your proposal was. I don't know that he's had the bill. He's kind of busy right now. There's lots of things in the air, and we're all probably tense. We're all nervous about getting to the end of session and hoping that a number of things come together. So I guess I would just encourage you as much as possible to hold this open and to really listen to each other. Again, I work as a counselor. I don't typically talk very much on the House floor. I don't. I talk more in this committee than maybe some other committees, but I'm a listener, and we need to listen to each other. And I fully believe that we need to listen to our farmers. And they feel as though they've not been listened to over the course of maybe a number of years on certain issues. I do believe that. And I want to say this. I very much appreciate that the majority party looked at the approval for the ground guard of protection, and you took that out of the bill. You took that out of the supplemental bill. You took that out of the ag policy bill. So I appreciate, because I think that that was a concession. I have relayed that message as well to the governor. I think that that is something that needs to be considered. And I'm not saying that the bullies are only in this room. I'm saying there are bullies throughout this this world, but there are bullies all over the place, and people that are maybe using different tactics and whatever, and I think there are a number of issues regarding that. But I think that holding this open, really hoping that instead of being using, instead of the stick, let's try and use the carrot. What can we try to figure out here? Is this something that the governor would be agreeable to, is to sign the bill? It seems a little like the cart before the horse, and we're, you know, kind of moving forward on something that maybe we shouldn't. And again, I guess I just say, you know, if there is an opportunity for public testimony and people are here and want to testify, it's not about changing necessarily people's opinions, but it is about hearing people and listening to what people have to say. And I think that that's really what we are here to do. So I just encourage you. I appreciate that you maybe said that we were going to take a break here. I just would strongly encourage you, and maybe even give it an overnight, because maybe we all need to sleep on something here and try to figure out what the next move is going to be, or if we can actually stop and listen to each other and come up with good solutions rather than just bullying solutions. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you to all of you for your comments. We did get some direction on the taking testimony aspect that has been a big part of our topic today. And again, my thought was that we were not here to debate the nitrogen rule. We're here to debate the resolution and give it an up or down. Research folks tell us that the statute 14.126 refers to the power of the committee. The power of the committee. And to me, that says we are here for one purpose, and that is to act on the resolution. Now, what I'm going to do, we're hearing possibly that the supplemental budget bill may be on the calendar tonight, which could make it late. We have not been called back yet. I'm going to call for a 10-minute recess and hopefully come back in 10 minutes and get some more clarification. And I would just say if we do take public testimony, it's going to be a 2-minute limit. And again, if it's going to get late at night or come back tomorrow, the same issues of, you say, doors not open, things like that. But it's kind of up to the committee. My thought was to come in here, take care of this one purpose, and be done. But if we feel that we have to take testimony, public testimony, again, my thought was that this 14.126 refers to the power of this committee, pretty strongly worded that way. So with that, I'm going to recess the meeting and be back at 5:10. I'm going to call the committee back into session, and I do have a clarification on the taking testimony, Representative Johnson and others. We talked to nonpartisan staff, and this is a precedent-setting thing we are doing today. There is no precedent as to is it correct or not to take public testimony. This is a committee resolution, and the rules that you were citing pertain to House files, Senate files, and House resolutions. This is a committee resolution, and it does not have to go any place further after our action today or whenever. It just needs to be sent to departments, not to the House, for approval. So I don't mean to keep changing up here, but and again, they talked to us about setting a precedent. So I am going to say that we are not going to be taking public testimony as we finish this hearing, because we are here to discuss the resolution, not the topic, but the resolution, and vote on the resolution. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to get on the record, I think that's a poor precedent to set. And again, I think the public testimony could have been, and again with Mr. Moulton, I think would have been very much to the resolution itself. And that's, in a way, that's worse news, because if another committee does this in the future, they can say, well, that Ag Committee back in the good old days, they did that, and we don't have to listen either. And I just always fall in the favor of listening to the public, and when in doubt, listen to the public. So I'm disappointed in the precedent. Thank you.
But again, to repeat, we are here to debate the resolution itself, not the topic of the debate. And I'm going to do something else again here. We're going to take another recess of 5 to 10 minutes. We are in no hurry to get back again to the House floor, and I would like to have the Republican Members Caucus again in room 454. And we're going to take another 10 minutes. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, we actually know how the vote's going to come out. Why don't we just vote and get it over with, and I'm just going to go have dinner.
We're going to come back in 10 minutes. I move a recess to the call of the chair, approximately 10 minutes. I'm going to call the meeting back into session, and after deliberation, talking with both sides, we are going to adjourn the meeting tonight in hopes that the governor will agree with us and sign the bill, and we will set a meeting for tomorrow at 12 noon, and that is the deadline. That if we could make some progress, and hopefully the governor would sign that policy bill, it's a good bill, has the soya loss provision in it without the nitrogen tax, we will wait until tomorrow. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would ask that you take this opportunity to also at that meeting allow for public testimony. And I think, again, you can provide the time limits. I'm really concerned about the precedent that's being set. And I don't, to be honest with you, I just don't. The Representative Anderson I know, and I've learned to know, and I share Representative Poppy's deep respect for you, and I think you know that. I don't think you want to be attached to that precedent. I really don't. And I think it could be done. I think there could be an understanding that I don't see people lining up. I'm not going to ask Mr. Moulton to come back to St. Paul. But the point is, I think the public understands the pressure we're under. Time-wise, I think the public respects that, but I also think the public expects that they be able to at least weigh in. And even allowing 3-on-3 or something like that, it could take 15, 20 minutes, but just it also helps us. It always helps me when I hear that public speak, and it helps us understand what the framework of the issue is. Like when you talk about, this is really just about adopting this resolution, well, we're not all that completely clear what that resolution is, and the testimony helps us understand that. So I would ask that you've got the opportunity to do that as you make the hearing, to also allow for the public testimony. That's my request.
Representative Johnson, I don't know if I quite agree with you in that if we want to have this statute explained by staff, we certainly can do that, explain it to the nth degree. But again, we are not here to debate the nitrogen rule, and I think that's what it's going to turn into if we open it up to public testimony. Representative Nornes.
Just a question of Mr. Chair. 12 noon is a time that we'll know for sure whether the governor has signed the bill. If he signs the bill, would then there be a necessary committee meeting?
That's a good point, Representative. No, we would not proceed with the resolution. And
my point is, Mr. Chair, that it's difficult to line up testifiers when there's some unknown factors here. So I think it's unfair to the testifiers to even put them on standby for a committee meeting that may not happen. So.
Yeah, good point. And Representative Miller.
No, nothing, Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
Oh, good.
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. When you say we're going to debate the resolution, I'm not totally clear what you mean, because this resolution, if passed, will have implications, will have outcomes that I think it would be useful for us to hear what people's opinion is about how it will impact. And I'm not talking about necessarily the nitrogen rule, but going forward, how will it impact people? And I think it's important that we hear something about that. Otherwise, I think we're making a decision in the dark. I don't mean in the dark of night. I mean, we don't understand what the implications are of what this resolution is going to mean. It may be simple in your mind, but it's not in mine. I'd like to know what the impact of it's going to be. And I think we'd need to have some testimony to help us understand that.
Again, I think staff can provide the mechanics of the resolution. Representative Mahoney. Pizza's getting cold.
I know it's getting cold, but I just want to be clear here, Mr. Chair, that you just threatened the governor that if he doesn't sign your bill, you're going to pass this resolution to screw with his water legacy. You did say that. I want the public to understand that the chair of the Ag Committee just threatened the governor with a retaliatory bill. Unbelievable legislative behavior.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you. Let's not bully each other. Let's not call names. Let's not go back and forth. Let's just stop it, okay? We need to listen respectfully, speak respectfully, and acknowledge that we have differing views on numerous things. I am appreciative that we're going to have the evening to try to resolve this issue and until noon tomorrow. And my hope is that the governor does read the bill and does agree that it is worth signing, because I think it's worth signing, and I would like to see him have that same impression. But if we continue to just go down, we're going to be done Monday, Tuesday, people are going to be at the doors. We're going to start this whole political circus again. And we got plenty of time for that in the future. So I'm just going to, I just respectfully ask that we all just take a chill pill and actually try to figure out how to solve this, but respect each other, listen, and let's hope that tomorrow we don't meet again, because I'd really like to see a resolution that includes the governor's signature on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Further comments, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, and I thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm certainly not trying to bully you, but this principle of the public input, when you indicated, and you're right, you are setting a precedent. And I think it's a precedent that I don't like being a part of. And so my thought is, I think Representative Narnes made a good point. People, but they know they would be on standby. And I think that's known today. And I think that's part of it. And as far as people straying away, I'll tell you, I will support you all the way in keeping it direct, making sure the testimony is brief and to the point of the resolution. It's possible nobody would testify too. That's possible. I understand that. But I don't think it's good measure to set a precedent that there is no public testimony. And that's my best advice for you. And I respect your decision, but that's my, like when you give the speaker advice, in this case I'm giving the chair, who I respect, my best advice.
Thanks, Representative. And again, to get back and hone in on what we are here for, the debate would have to be, for example, when you go to the tax committee, you talk about tax issues. Civil law, it's civil law issues. The discussion here is whether or not this committee has a jurisdiction of 14.162. To me, that is the crux of why we're here and the reason why we're here. And that's why I feel that this debate is among the committee, and it has to center on whether we have, as a committee, the jurisdiction with 14.162. I will check again, but what we were told by nonpartisan staff was that this is a committee resolution, and what you mentioned earlier is for House files, Senate files, House resolutions. And again, here we go again with this discord here. And with that, I'm going to choose to finish on what Representative Poppe said. And again, the committee will be set to meet at 12 o'clock noon tomorrow. Meeting is adjourned.